Qantas, come down with your breeches of deerskin and jackets of brown, with your red woolen caps and your moccasins. Come to the gathering summons of trumpet and drum. Come down with your rifle at Grey Wolf and Fox.
Welcome to Radio Free Canada. I am your host, Kevin Annett. Welcome back. It's January 29th. Welcome, fellow patriots all over the world. We're here every Sunday, as you know, to lift high the banner of common law, the common law republic that is really wrapped around the globe now in response to the global corporate tyranny that we're all engaging in fighting at every level, especially since the powers that be are all tend to be colluding and complicit in that tyranny. We are here to educate and to organize. And in the spirit of the song you just heard, which is a famous Revolutionary War song from America, we have with us Gary Bergman, who's with today. He's going to be telling us about the common law court movement in Nevada, which apparently is one of the few states in America which has never relinquished common law in its courts. Gary's going to talk about the common law court system and the marshal service that they've established to defend the common law courts and their Nevada Republic. He's going to be with us in a few minutes. Also in the news, and this is very important, you might have noticed if you follow our work at itccs.org, there was a common law arrest warrant posted this week. Now, it was put out by something that was set up about 6 months ago, in July of 2016, a grand jury investigation into human trafficking. And because of the loads of evidence we're getting, especially on the west coast of North America, in the Vancouver-Seattle area, a lot of new information and evidence coming in about human trafficking there, the grand jury has decided to issue a common law arrest warrant. One of the things they found out was one of the main money launderers that are backing the human trafficking in the North Pacific Rim area is something called the British Columbia Investment Management Corporation, BCIMC, the BC Investment Management Corporation. It's the largest private equity firm in British Columbia. It consists of a lot of the pensions of government employees. It's got over $4.5 billion in assets, and we have found out in the course of our investigations, including sources in the government, that BCIMC has been laundering dirty money for criminal organizations for a number of years, and part of that, those criminal bodies include Chinese cartels that are involved in human trafficking. Now, we have linked this with the disappearance of Aboriginal families in British Columbia in those traditional hotspots like the downtown east side of Vancouver, Vancouver Island in northern BC, along the so-called Highway of Tears, where so many hundreds and hundreds of Native women have gone missing. And we had Merv Ritchie, one of the northern British Columbia journalists, on the air a few months ago to tell us about that. Well, the evidence has increased, and the grand jury investigators took that information to police and others in British Columbia, who not only flatly refused to do anything about it, but warned the investigators that they'd be in prison or worse if they pursued the matter, kind of classic Canadian response to their own corruption. And in response, the grand jury said, look, we need a common law arrest warrant so that any citizen can go in and stop the people who are openly trafficking, not only people in general, but a big target, children, and especially the Aboriginal children in foster care and other government agencies who are 400 times more likely to be raped or abused in those agencies than in their own families. So this is a warrant you can read about online, itccs.org. We will be posting that signed and stamped warrant, and basically this allows you to go out into the community and arrest people who you even suspect might be harming children. The police and judicial authorities are required to not only assist in the execution of this warrant, but if they don't agree with it, to actually back off and not interfere, because if they do, they're obstructing justice, and they actually can be considered an accessory to a crime. It's a warrant that's valid for 1 year, and again, we not only urge you to use it, but we'll be organizing training workshops to show people and equip them in how to use it. This is the kind of warrant that can be used anywhere in the world. It has universal jurisdiction because it comes from the common law. So that's a very important piece of evidence. And just before we get to Gary, I think it's especially relevant because in the news, we've heard about Donald Trump and, of course, one of his first acts in office, signing an executive order allowing all the oil pipelines to go through and to protect, obviously, his own private investments. Well, that nice liberal icon in Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, has done the same thing. The Trudeau government authorized the extension of the Enbridge pipeline across British Columbia, and no accident, that same week, there were two major oil spills at Enbridge pipelines, one in BC and one in Saskatchewan on Aboriginal land. So, this kind of folly and corruption at the top level of society is everywhere, and this is why we, the people, need to take action when the system is openly criminal. So follow all that work, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. And interestingly enough, about 30 seconds before the show began, when I was talking to my faithful operator, Don, my entire computer system crashed, so I can't tell what time it is, I can't read any of my notes. And maybe if I'll have to guess whether Gary is on yet or not. Gary, are you there at all? No. Okay, well, then I'll keep going. One of the things I also had ready to read was a letter. You know, we've often asked for you, the listeners, to write into your remarks and your comments and ideas for different shows. We got one, and I'm going to read it later if I can get my computer running again. But guess what? It's from my father, Bill Annett, down in Florida. He had some very witty, as usual, very witty remarks about one of the guests we had on, Steve Finney, talking about things we can do now under the common law to fight back, like get on the bus and not pay your bus fare, because that's actually unconstitutional to demand payment for public travel. And so anyway, Dad has some comments about that, which hopefully we'll get to. And also in mind, I'm going from memory here, folks, which is, as you enter your 60s, as I'm doing now, that's sometimes can be taxing. But anyway, one of the other things we wanted to flag for you was the fact that 1 week today, we are starting a new program. In conjunction with Freedom Talk Radio Scotland, we are doing a show called Radio Free Anglia. Now, again, the focus will be on using common law to fight crimes against children, crimes against our liberties, and other things. And we are going to be broadcasting every Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, and I believe that's 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. This show will be aimed at audiences in England, primarily in Europe, where we have a fair chunk of our listeners. So that's Radio Free Anglia with my co-host Andy Peacher from Radio Freedom Talk Radio Scotland. And that'll be next Sunday, starting Sunday, February 5th, every Sunday. So for you faithful listeners, you'll have two shows to listen to. 11 a.m. Pacific time is Radio Free Anglia. 3 p.m. Pacific time, Radio Free Canada. And so I'm going to just check here. Actually, I have a really good quote I had up here earlier. If you've looked at our ITCCS site, and there it goes. I'm using my friend's laptop here, and it just vanished. So never mind, I won't read you the quote. It was a good one from Thomas Jefferson. It had to do with something about every 20 years we need a revolution to keep the government honest. And also, the republic will only last as long as the government is not in the hands of moneyed interests. That's another famous Thomas Jefferson quote. Of course, people say, are you going to really listen to the sayings of a white slave owner who said one thing and did another? Well, look, people, hell, we've all been there. We say one thing, do another. But the old idea is that you take the idea and maybe somebody will act on it, even though we may be compromised in our own life. There are others. Our ideas are like seeds, and they spring up in the future in ways we can never imagine. So we stand by those ideas, regardless of our personal complicity or limitations as human beings. Okay, so, hello, Gary. You know, my computer crashed, so I had no idea. I was flying blind. I was hoping you were on. So it's really good to have you. That's the thing, you know, you can't trust technology. We just got to fall back on good old human effort. But I want to welcome you, Gary, today. I want to ask you to give the folks a little bit of background as to who you are. Tell us a bit about your movement and what you're engaged in these days.
Well, let's see. I'm not like you. I'm pushing 65. And I did in construction. I was a steam fitter, pipe welder, mechanical contractor for 40 years. Got involved in some other movements back in 77. So I've been in and out. But this common law is the one that really hit me hard. And we've been trying to study it and push it through here in Nevada. It's in our Nevada Revised Statutes as 1.030. It's in the Constitution, just like almost the other 49 states. And we're right now trying to organize Nevada as a republic because it is illegal as a corporate state. It was never legally ratified during the Civil War.
So tell us, listeners, what that means exactly when you say a republic. What's your understanding of what a republic is?
Well, my understanding would be something that's independent, from standing on their own, would be a short term to put it.
Okay. Now, I know you've been involved as well in the common law court there, and the interesting thing you mentioned is that you've also established a marshal service to protect the court.
Talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. Well, everything here is slow going. It's kind of hard to get people to change their mind, even though you can put them black and white. So the marshal service is a volunteer service. It's also legal under the Judicial Act of 1794, which allows courts to provide their own marshals. So that makes it legal. So the deal is to protect the court, protect the citizens, and guarantee the constitutional rights.
Right. Now, talk a little bit about what prompted this. I mean, what are some of the issues that people have brought to the common law court? What are the things that are really kind of upsetting people in your state these days, you know?
Well, the simple fact is we don't have no grand juries, and the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution says you cannot be indicted unless you got in front of a grand jury. So they're completely ignoring that part of the Constitution. So under U.S. Code, that's one or more persons involved, that's a conspiracy to violate your rights. So that follows under Title 18, Section 241 and 242. That's a $10,000 fine and or 10 years imprisonment. But nobody seems to know this.
We're trying to do education. Yeah, like I always thought that the grand jury system was enshrined in the Constitution. It was, being there from the beginning. Or am I wrong?
Oh, it's there, but it's like our DA, who, you remember, when they bankrupted the nation back in the 30s, they changed it from a constitutional republic to a social democracy. And they went from common law to the universal commercial code.
Right.
So the lawyers aren't taught anything really about constitutional law. I had a lawyer tell me that years ago. They're just taught ethics. Constitutional law, no. They don't have the slightest idea about it. And we have a DA here that says that the Constitution was written for the federal government, not for we the people.
Right. So, now, that seems to go against the whole philosophy and spirit of the Founding Fathers, who made it very clear that the people were the source of sovereignty, not the government.
Right. And it's like I tell everybody, most nations have two flags. Two flags mean different things. One, the flag we fly now is a military battle flag. It means martial law. And the civil flag done by John Adams in 1799 meant constitutional, civil, common law. Mm-hmm. So people really don't know when they're going to court how to fight it. So you should be fighting it with military law. And that's what I've been kind of studying there. And the biggest thing I thought was interesting was out of the Constitution, it talks about treason committed by judges or other public officials. And treason is committed when you violate your oath of office.
Right.
And the Constitution defines treason as declaring war against we the people.
So in other words, people in office, and I'm assuming that applies to anybody in public office, can be charged by the people with treason and brought to trial.
That's right. And then when I was reading, too, from this book, The Rights to Laws During the Civil War, it was also one of the many international laws of the, the Law of the Nations. It follows under that category, too.
Right. Well, if you... go ahead. Sorry.
No, I say I'm just spending time here during my retirement years learning how to... get educated, and that's what we want to do with the community.
Well, it's really important, you know, Gary. I mean, we're all finding that there's all this stuff that's been hidden from us. And the minute we start educating ourselves and taking action, the boot starts coming down. I mean, I was reading last year that even mentioning the word sovereignty or being a freeman on the land, which are old English common law terms, those are considered now by the FBI and the RCMP in Canada, those are considered indicating a terrorist organization. So I guess I'd have to arrest all the founding fathers if they were still alive today.
Yeah, and that's what the DA says now. You know, she knows we're putting together this common law, and she says, well, oh, you're those sovereigns. I said, what are you talking about, sovereigns? Did we say anything about sovereigns? We just said constitutionalists and common law. We're trying to restore it. So why are you blackballing us, calling us sovereign? I know, because I know what you're saying when you're doing that. You're saying we're basically domestic terrorists, which we're not.
Yeah, you know, it's just it's mind-boggling what's going on these days. And I think education. Tell us a little bit about what you're involved in in educating the people about the common law. What are some of the ways you go about that?
Well, we have a radio show once a week. It's the recordings played twice a week extra, and it's called Seventh Amendment Hour on our local station on 98.1. And it only gets out to part of this 30,000 community, so not everybody gets to listen to it. But at least we're getting some of it out there. And then twice a month we have meetings for a couple hours, and we invite people in, and we try to educate them, give them reference things to look up. Because like I tell them, even on the station, we'll help you, guide you, but I'm not going to walk you through it. You have to educate yourself, because if you don't educate yourself, you're really not going to learn nothing. And we're just putting out flyers. We just finally get the flyers made up. And it's called Awake, We the People of the Nevada Republic. And it kind of gives a little brief explanation of what's going on, and hopefully that they'll be interested and give us a call or come down to our meetings.
Have you faced any kind of harassment from the police or other people?
No, well, the sheriff, we have been trying to keep informed, because she says she was a constitutional sheriff when we helped her get elected 2 years ago. And she was supposed to help educate her deputies or ask us to come down and educate them, which she ain't doing. In fact, the deputies are illegally removing our common law court's right to travel license plates, which is a theft. Because it's a contract between us. Pardon?
What are they doing? How do you mean they're removing them?
They asked the people to remove them, that the plates are illegal, but you know, under the Constitution or not, it's a right to travel. The Supreme Court verified that. Licensing here to travel is a privilege, which makes it null and void because it conflicts with constitutional rights. Like I said, the Supreme Court verified that, and there's numerous cases and even state Supreme Court cases to verify this. But nobody wants to educate their deputies. The deputies have presumption of law, not knowledge of law.
Right.
So that's the thing. We got two cases where they removed. One didn't receive a citation. Well, they just stole his plates. And so that's in violation of Title 18. And then we have another one. They removed the plate and gave him a citation. That's another bad one. Then we had another one. Care less about the plate or the driver's license. Just got her for going 5 miles over the speed limit.
You know, Gary, it sounds like there's a whole civil war brewing all the time between people standing on their natural rights and the government and their whole statutory way of operating. Is that your reading?
Well, yeah, people have to understand that these government agencies are nothing but corporations, and they're for profit, and their way they gain their money is by these statutes and fines, regulations, and citations. That's their money makers. So people are to the point they don't question government, and they say, well, why didn't we know this before? I said, well, stop to think about when all this stuff happened. You only had newspapers, and you didn't even have the telegraph yet. So you had word of mouth and newspapers. That was it. It was easy to corrupt the government.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now with computers and televisions, I mean, the knowledge is out there.
Gary, one of the issues that we found, the need for common law courts, of course, up in Canada, we have no tradition of what you guys have south of the border. It's all been, you know, admiralty law. There's no separation of powers. And when you have these private agencies, like in Ontario, the Children's Aid Society, they come in and they grab children out of their families, and then they traffic them. They get $100,000 from the government for every child they can put in foster care. And there's horrible abuses going on. yet the police cooperate all the time. Do you find the same thing down there on other issues? I mean, do you find that, that this is something that you're hearing from people?
Well, regarding that child trafficking, I've heard that, but the deal was they get them into the juvenile courts and then they put them in prison where they're making the money.
You mean the private?
They're making money off the foster care and the juvenile facilities.
They're kind of making it at both ends. They put the child in the foster care and then in the private prisons. Wasn't there a judge who came to trial for that in America? He went to prison?
I believe that was in Pennsylvania, yes, because he was doing big kickbacks. He was getting paid handsomely for putting all those juveniles in prison.
He even had shares in the company, I think, that owned the prison, from what I remember.
You might be right on that, but I know he's serving a little time for that.
Yeah.
So payback comes around.
So it shows you even the system is forced at times to put their own in, on trial for exactly the reasons you're saying, you know.
That's right. And it's just ignorance is the big thing. And, you know, you can educate ignorance most of the time, and that's the problem we're finding. We can't educate them.
Yeah, well,
we're trying our best.
I guess it means maybe another generation come along, younger people, you know, who are open to these things.
Yeah, I'm reading a book written by a retired Supreme Court justice of the Navajo Nation. Mm-hmm. And the whole Navajo Nation's court system is based on common law. Hmm. They had what we used to have, or we have, is military tribunals. That's what how the Navajo nations and other nations' court system was, based on military. And that's what we have all here off the reservations or nations. But it's a very interesting book, and they said common law is the only law that goes along with their beliefs. And that's why almost every Indian nation here in the United States has common law.
Well, I wanted to, you know, that's, I'm glad you mentioned that, Gary, because actually I have with me one of my co-hosts, Katie Stokwa.
Right.
She's on the line with us, and she is...
Isn't it synchronistic you bring that up?
Well, yeah, synchronistic, because
yeah.
Katie has Algonquin blood in her here in Canada, in Kanata.
Uh-huh.
And what are your thoughts, Katie, about that? About what you just heard?
About the Navajo Nation?
Yeah.
Well, the... The ancient natives, they their whole structure, their whole system was based on natural law in the first place.
Right.
I read these journals, and it explains in quite detail about the native way of doing things. It's very collective. Yes, it's very individualistic, but every decision is made collectively for the whole of the good. And they had such a respect for the elders, for children, because the children are the next generation, for Mother Earth. They knew. And they considered Mother Earth to be a sentient being. She is alive. She's thriving. They communicated with her. And they would never dare do anything to harm her. And so everything was based on natural law, which is, in our language, common law in the first
right.
place. And things were very much in balance with nature and with each other. There was none of this warring and feuding. Yeah, sure, it became that way eventually, but you know, back in the day, it never was that way.
Well,
yeah,
here's a little sentence here.
Sorry, Gary, go ahead. Your thoughts.
I'm sorry, too. Justice Austin has a little sentence here. He writes that the courts of the Dene Nation and the skillful and careful job it has done of blending the old with the new to create one of the most, if not the most, respected tribal legal systems in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, we had a show on a few weeks ago, Gary, and I urge you to go and listen to it. It was two women from Grant Township in western Pennsylvania. And there was this fracking company come in, you know about fracking and the way they poison the watersheds of different communities.
Right.
Now, what they did was they tried to stop Pacific General Electric, Pennsylvania General Energy Company from putting this frack well in, and they failed. So what they did is they brought in what's called the Home Rule Charter, which they're able to do under the Constitution. They take power from the state and devolve it back into the community, and they say, under our Home Rule Charter, fracking is not allowed, and nobody can go to jail for trying to stop it. So they took back the power, and it seems to me it's like getting back to what Katie's talking about, the natural law where people have the authority among themselves, and there's no power over them, whether that's a president, a state government, a pope, a king, anybody. That's all not allowed.
And not only that, but one of the things that they talked about on that program, which is really critical, is that they are educating the police and the law enforcement officers, so they're not off, you know, doing their own thing. They're on the same page.
Yeah.
And that is really critical, because at the end of the day, you know, we've all or many of us have gone to universities or college that are run by the elite. And so knowledge and certain knowledge and information is left out on purpose.
Yeah.
So it's about re-educating, you know, law enforcement officers, because it's their world, too.
Yes, and I found that interview very interesting. That's like we have some retired veterans and police officers, and once you educate them, the police officers say, you're right. Why didn't I not know this?
Yeah.
And they stand behind common law now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good, too. In that Home Rule Charter from Grand Township, the folks there also said that nature has rights under the law and that they have the right to appear in court, just the way... Back in 1883, it was the first time a corporation was given the right of a person under the law. It involved a California railway company. And interestingly, the Supreme Court, they had a 5-2 decision. I think there were 7 Supreme Court justices back then. 5-2 in favor of the railway company having the rights of a person. And the 2 dissenting judges both died of heart attacks within a couple of months. And ever since then, corporations have had the rights of people. Ever since 1883. Well, this is kind of turning that back, saying, no, nature also has rights. And when those rights are violated, it's just like any native person would tell you, that no, we have to protect Mother Earth or we're all dead.
Yeah.
Well, that's just like during our American Civil War, when we had the illegal Congress in session, they passed where a person became a corporation. The word person meant corporation.
Right.
During
well,
the
1860s. Well, when you look at the meaning of the word persona, is Greek, it means mask. It's a mask you put over yourself. You can have a corporate person or a human person, but it's still just a fiction under the law. It's not the flesh and blood man or woman. And that's part of the teaching we've got to show people, that when you actually stand on your flesh and blood status, the non-capitalized name, that the system backs down. They can't deal with you, because only when you enter their jurisdiction can they. That's a really important point.
Yeah, in fact, you know, when I first found out about your international tribunal, that was one of the things that helped push me even further into common law, to realize how many nations had common law on their books.
Well, that's the thing. It's got universal jurisdiction. It predated all parliaments, all churches, all church law or state law or anything. And that's the power of it. You know, it's like this sleeping giant within everyone's brain. Once we awaken the people to this, we're a power that can't be defeated. And so that's really, I think that's one of the reasons we're all targeted so much for misinformation and smears all over the Internet, because they know we're getting close to something here.
Well, you know, what's amazing is if you want to go to a university to learn about common law, you know where you have to go?
Mm-mm.
The University of American Common Law is in the Ukraine.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's on Facebook. They got a real nice Facebook. They have lawyers, scholars come from the United States and lecture there in the Ukraine. But yet, do we have a common law university or even teach common law? No, we do not teach here. You have to go to the Ukraine.
Wow.
So that's,
Gary,
what's wrong with that?
Do you find people in your neck of the woods like this? I perceive this global awakening occurring. Do you find that people in your neck of the woods are waking up to what's going on?
Slowly. The problem we have in our neck of the woods is a lot of retired California government employees and a lot of military veterans that don't even want to think about the truth. They were brainwashed for so long. I mean, we have some to understand about the flags, and some could care less about the flags and what the symbols mean. And but you can prove it to them. If you get a chance to talk to them, you can tell them, well, let's talk about the German flags, the Russian flag, the Japanese flag, and you can show them where the flags are. And if they really want to look up something, you can go see the movie Sand Pebbles. There's a minute-and-a-half segment where they strike the military, well, they strike the civil flag up in the bow, and they run up the military flag before an engagement.
Right. That's really important to teach people. You know, you never hear this stuff. And Gary, do you have other? I meant to ask, do you have a website or something you can point people to show what you guys are doing?
We have the Seventh Amendment Task Force, which is on Facebook right now. It's the only thing we got going right now.
Okay. And do you have kind of events coming up or ways you know, things you can invite people to we can announce?
Well, we're just the first and second Monday of every month. We have monthly meetings next to the new Sears store here in Pahrump. But we're going to be at any activities in the county. We're going to set up a booth and hand out literature and explain all this stuff.
Well, I really am glad to be in touch with you for another reason, too, because I wanted to share this with you on the air, and we can talk more off-air about it. But over the last couple of years, I've been getting reports from social workers in the Navajo and Apache, the Anasazi area in New Mexico and Nevada. And they're saying that a lot of their children are going missing off the reservation. And, in fact, the level of child abduction is highest in that area than almost anywhere in the country. And we've even had reports of child sacrificial rites going on some of those reservations. So I wanted to flag that to you because this is something that obviously, you know, the disappearance of our children is right at the heart of why we're doing this. And I don't know if you've heard any of that yourself, but we've got to take the step of stopping these people doing it, regardless of what the police do, you know, protecting the children in our community.
If once my officers are trained and they have their oath, if any of those Native nations want our assistance as international marshals, we'll be happy to assist.
Well, that's excellent because that's the stage it's at now. It's like up in Canada here. People have convened the courts. They brought in the indictments. They've got guilty verdicts against these parties. But now it's enforcement. That's the big issue. How do we enforce the verdicts? How do we protect our people against the system? So that's something I want to work with you on.
Yeah. But I won't allow my officers to be deputized until they've completed all the training.
Right.
I'm not sure if I missed it, but who is training, you know, the marshals or the officers?
Well, our group is one of my training officers has written training manuals for different police departments around the country. He wrote up ours, and he was a vehicle homicide detective out of New Jersey, and he's going to teach, and we have a retired another sheriff's department sergeant that will be offering classes. Then we have some vets that will teaching hands, small arms, and also we have a professional school we use.
Okay.
So we're making this stuff available to anybody that's interested. We will send you a training manual and also where you can go for your weapons training.
And do you have, what do the numbers look like right now as far as the officers that you're training?
Still on the low side.
Low?
Yeah, because every time anytime you have volunteers, unless they're getting paid, nobody wants to show up.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah, I wish it was higher so we get going with this thing.
Have you thought of going to the colleges or the high schools to start teaching the children about this stuff?
Yes, but we've had one of our members that familiar with the school board here, and he says they wouldn't let us in there.
Really?
Yeah.
See, So I find you got to go to individual teachers and get invites, just go into the classrooms, get to know teachers, and go around the system, go around the principal and the school board and all that.
Well, that's what we're hoping to do. We're going to put some notices out in some local publications, so hopefully this will pick up the people's interest.
Yeah.
We're hoping.
Well, you know, one of the things I was going to ask you too, Gary, was are you finding, like, you know, this with, like with the Grant Township movement, it crossed across party lines. There were Republicans and Democrats working together. It was great to see. People weren't divided anymore by these party divisions. And is this something you're finding too, or are people kind of stepping past those divisions, or in the working
group? Not yet.
Pardon me?
They're still dedicated to their parties.
Really?
Yeah.
The country's kind of polarized.
Yeah. We've been trying to work both parties, but I'm not getting no response from them. They're happy with what's going on, and they won't wake up their eyes. It's just like I tell everything. You want to wake up your eyes, read that. What really woke my eyes up was the Act of 1871.
Right.
And when we lost the District of Columbia. Now, and I tell people, now, if you want to compare things to see how much proof what I'm saying is, go to the Indian Act of 1871. That's where any treaties before 1871 were sealed with Congress, and they were sovereign nations. After 1871, the treaties became contracts, and they were sealed by the CEO president of the corporation ruling over the District of Columbia.
Wow. I never knew that.
Yeah, and I think you guys had the same thing happening up there in 1876, I believe.
Well, it was right after Canada became this legal incorporated nation in 1867, but right, the first prime minister was a bagman for the big railway company that was trying to link the east and west, the Canadian Pacific Railway. And, you know, so there was all of that corporate machination going up here as well. I mean, it's the same game, really.
Yeah, and if an Indian nation wants more money or land that's not under the present agreement, they have to give up their sovereignty and become a corporate entity.
That's it. Mm. That's exactly
it. I'll tell you something. You know, we talk about this corporate entity and the United States Corporation, and we also have a Spanish-American War reenactment because it was the first foreign war used by the corporation to use American troops as mercenaries. But I've been doing a little study and research and talking to a lot of these professionals I've come across in Vegas in the nursing industry about the fact that the Philippines to this day is still a corporate entity of the United States Corporation.
Really?
Yeah. And I've had some Filipinos just look at me amazed. They said, "How do you know that?" A little research. They said, "You're right. We're not a sovereign nation. We're a corporate entity of the United States Corporation."
So, you know, this is really coming down to how do you decorporatize, how do you reassert people's power against this corporate body when it's running things, right?
Right.
This is an act of treason under their laws, just like John Adams and Tom Jefferson and all those guys were terrorists, according to the British, right? But we're up against the same kind of situation, wouldn't you say?
Well, no, I wouldn't call them terrorists. I figure they were what do you call it? Hidden agents, the Crown? Because it was Franklin that formed the United States Company with some of the founding fathers back during the French and Indian War, 1754.
Right. Now, he was a Freemason, right?
Well, I didn't get into the Mason, but he probably
was. He was. They all were.
If you look at the American battle flag, it's the same flag that Queen Elizabeth had commissioned in the early 1600s for the East India Trading Company.
Right, yeah.
And all they did, they took out the logo, put in the 13 stars in the circle, and shortened that field a little bit. But that was the East India Trading, and there's other nations that have similar flags because of that. So
Gary,
yes, sir.
I was going to ask you, have you been approached by other, I know that there's common law groups springing up all over the place. And
yes.
Are you in touch with others outside Nevada, or is this kind of a Nevada-based movement?
No, I'm not involved, but there's the biggest one, I think, is the Continental common law courts.
Mm-hmm. There was a thing, I remember I was speaking in Minneapolis in South Dakota about 3 years ago, and I was in touch with all these people coming forward. They were involved with something called Restore the Republic, and it was mostly farmers in that part of the Midwest, and they were setting up kind of a different common law-based system of government right alongside the existing one. They arrested like a dozen of their top leaders. They're still kind of rotting in prison in Duluth, Minnesota. And but they were doing things like challenging mortgage fraud. These judges bringing in, you know, in collusion with the banks, bringing in these fake eviction orders against farmers to grab their land. They had the marshals, the U.S. marshals in Minneapolis, ready to arrest these judges, and then the boot came down. And it got kind of scattered. So I don't know if you heard about those folks.
No, I just read a case the other about 2 weeks ago about that foreclosure where the guy beat it against the banks and proved that the banks never loaned him any money. They just put credit on their books. And the judge says, well, that's not money. You never loaned him anything. Case dismissed. Mm-hmm. So he got to keep his house.
Yeah.
That was in Minnesota. Now,
Was that a recent story?
It was on Facebook. It went through on Facebook recently, within the last couple of weeks.
Shocking.
I'd like to kind of write this history of this Restore the Republic movement, because they were quite advanced. They had hundreds of farmers organized in their movement. It was like another.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that group yet. No.
Yeah, I'm going to put you in touch with some of those folks, because they've got some good lessons they learned. One of the gross examples, there was a disabled man. He was bringing a case against this judge. They had him in solitary confinement for 6 months, even though he was in a wheelchair. They came down on these people really hard to try to make an example of them, which is what the government does. When you reach a certain point, they come down on you and target the leaders, which is why we got to make this, you know, spread it.
That's why you got to keep it peaceful,
all over.
Yeah, and it has to be done by voting. So, but the people voted in, and, you know, the government's got to go along with it.
Yeah. How do you find it these days in the wake of the election down there? I mean, are people, we talked about the divisions, Republican, Democrat. It's like the country's in two warring camps. Do you think that's part of the whole strategy of how the elites keep power? Like, what's your view on all that?
Well, yeah, it was two cartels fighting for control. And like I told everybody, I said, go back and play his oath of office, and you'll see that it says Constitution of the United States, not the United States of America. What it should have been was the Constitution for the United States
right.
of America.
Yeah.
So he took the oath to the corporation, and if everybody knows anything about flags, the flags with the yellow fringes are not American flags. They're the flags of Admiralty Law and the corporation. That's their symbols. Symbolism means everything. So when you see a state flag or any flag with those gold fringes on, that means they're corporatized. They're a corporate entity of the United States.
They're under, in Canada too, right? You're under military rule right now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Yeah. Admiralty law means the power of the captain on the ship to have absolute authority over people, and they've extended that law onto the land, which is, I find it interesting, a lot of these so-called public organizations like the Children's Aid Societies, even the taxation, it's all coming from offshore corporations. And they're channeling the money, IRS or the Canada Revenue Agency, they're taking your money, tax money, and channeling it offshore. And, you know, it's the rule of the the Admiralty Law allows these dictators to rule from afar, basically.
Boy, you know what amazes me, like you're talking about the Federal Reserve notes, you know, they're backed by petrol. Retired General Wesley Clark wrote a book, and he was going around on speaking lectures and talking about what he found out before he retired, that they were going to tax seven Arab nations because it was either the gold or they were selling their oil for whatever the European currency was.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hurting the petrol dollar. So they was declaring war. He says, that's why we're going to war against these seven Arab nations. It's written right here. And he documented it all. But does anybody pay attention? No.
Hmm. Yeah.
People don't want to know the truth.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I find this common law movement is really touching a lot of chords with people. It's kind of crossing boundaries. And as polarized as America is right now, that's going to change. You know, so I think we really have to keep holding up the banner on this. Gary, do you have any, we've got about, probably about 7 minutes left. Do you have any things you want to emphasize, things you're going to be planning in the future? Are there any cases coming up in the criminal court you want to talk about?
Not particularly do I or that I've really been following, but I know there's a movement going around to get sheriffs and sheriff candidates to sign an oath to uphold the de jure legal government and the Constitution with its common laws.
Really?
And in fact, one of the future candidates for Clark County in Las Vegas has already signed that statement. And I would like to have my sheriff sign that statement, too.
So what does this statement compel them to do? Just
Well, it's basically hoping that, you know, that they're going to follow constitutional law, not corporate law.
Right.
I mean, just like this guy used to be a detective for the Las Vegas Metro. In fact, he arrested O.J., but he says Metro is nothing but a corporation, the sheriff's department. People need to know that. They're not there for we the people. They're there for their profits. So, and that's what it seems like everybody is. Everybody's a little corporate
like
entity. And, I'm sorry?
Yeah. Well, Gary, I really appreciate you being on, and we're going to have you back. I'm trying to organize linking up people like in Pennsylvania, the folks in Minnesota, and you and others, so we have kind of a sense across the country what's going on. We'll do that in the future. Any final words you want to share?
No, just the truth is out there, folks. Educate yourself.
Yep. Well, thank you, brother. We'll have you back on again. I appreciate you being on today with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
Have a nice
week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye for now. Well, Kate, that's... interesting. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things before we leave. This thing I mentioned earlier, and I'm sorry to the listeners. It's not accidental. My entire computer crashed right on the verge of the show, and I can't access anything anymore. But this has happened a few times. But one of the reasons that I wanted to flag this today is this new evidence we have about the, and this is mind-blowing, the biggest private equity company in British Columbia is laundering money for criminal cartels that are doing human trafficking. We have that from insiders, and it's confirmed other stuff we had, other evidence we had from the Aboriginal community. So this is big. I mean, this is the largest company operating. They have strong ties with the provincial government. And so, to me, and Kate, I wanted your opinion about this, what this does, it puts everything on a different foundation now. It means we have hard evidence that the government itself, you know, is involved in human trafficking.
Mm-hmm. And we've known that for, well, I mean, especially you, working 20-plus years doing this, you've known this for some time. But now, you know, the evidence is just pouring in. It's overwhelming. It's so large. It's worldwide. And, you know, it's no wonder the leaders get targeted such as yourself, right? It's just so large.
There was that thing that I shared with you earlier. There's a big, in the corporate media now, that you hear this term fake news.
Yeah.
And it just came out that Veterans Today and me and Ryan Gable were all part of a fake news conspiracy.
Right.
And yet, you know, they don't mention others who are obviously smear artists. They're never mentioned. But we are officially entitled now fake news, even though they don't look at any of our hard evidence.
Well, when in fact, in reality, it's the six major corporations that own, you know, media, newspapers, magazines that are you may as well call them propaganda news sites, because that's exactly what they are. It's propaganda. It's lies. People need to shut off the television. They can't get their news from television anymore.
No.
And it hasn't been that. It's been that way for some time, but it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Well, we've got a few minutes left, but I again wanted to remind people a few things. Next Sunday, February 5th, we're starting up that other link to our our own alternative media network, Radio Free Anglia, based out of Scotland. And that's going to be broadcast by Andy Petrie, who's a longtime activist there. He and Neelu Berry have been involved in England in confronting the organized child trafficking going on right within the legal system. And they've been targeted. Neelu has been thrown in prison for it. There's some really solid people over in England. They're going to be part of our new Radio Free Anglia. That's going to be every Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. And 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time for all those new European listeners we'll have. So that's really good. And again, if folks are listening to this and they want to send in feedback, Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, Republic of Kanata at gmail.com. And please keep buying our books, especially murderbydecree.com. You can get it on Amazon, Murdered by Decree, The Crime of Genocide in Canada. And I know, Katie, you're one of the few people who've read it cover to cover. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about it?
Oh, it stinks.
Watch it, it'll quote you.
It's an outstanding document. I can't believe that you put out four books this year alone. Like, it's just a mind-boggling document. And especially the government archives that you've, you know, meticulously researched and documented so well, Kevin.
One piece of evidence, again, like, we're trying to get this into the high schools especially. And I was, one group of teachers who run with this have said that the documents they did, this one teacher, and I won't say where they're going to get targeted, but it's in British Columbia. Teacher took some of the documents I found, including one which shows that the very first year the Indian residential schools opened, the death rate was already over three quarters. Eight of the 13 children died of tuberculosis mm-hmm. that first year. Mm-hmm. Now, why are they knocking off in the very first year when the death rate is only 5% on the reservations they came from? Yet to go into the schools, they're death traps. That same death rate is there 50 years later. That one piece of evidence is damning, and yet it's censored out of all the official Truth and Reconciliation accounts. You'll never hear it talked about. You know, it's proof of what we're proving, that genocide was committed intentionally and is still going on. So that's why you should get the book, Murder by Decree, The Crime of Genocide in Canada. Unrelenting. All these other books you can find at Amazon.com. Just put my name, Kevin Annett, and you'll get it. So, Katie, any final thoughts? We've got about 1 minute left.
No, just I feel for you. Sorry about your computer crashing. It's
It happens.
You bounce back well. You know, I guess it's to be expected, though, eh?
Yeah, well, that's why I say to people, don't rely on the emails or the Internet. Just, you know, find direct ways to reestablish this movement on the ground. We've got to get out of their system altogether, mm-hmm. rebuild a new one. So anyway, thank you all for tuning in. Thanks, Katie, for stepping in and helping today. And again, our... next week, if you follow itccs.org, you'll see what's coming up in the next few weeks. But again, spread the word, Radio Free Anglia next week as well. And until then, be strong and stay clear, brothers and sisters. We'll see you.
Take care, brother.